This is your Polycast for Tuesday, April 11th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the Real ID debate resumes next week, and Colin Peterson talks health care. State lawmakers are taking a break this week, but when they get back, Real ID is at the top of their to-do list. At issue is whether Minnesotans will be able to board domestic flights next year using their driver's licenses as ID. House and Senate negotiators are scheduled to start working out the differences between bills next Tuesday. There's only one significant difference, and it's the same issue that prevented passage of a final bill last session. Tim Pugmire has more.
Minnesota lawmakers lifted a 2009 ban on Real ID planning last session, but they couldn't agree on the next step. State-issued driver's licenses and other identification cards that do not meet the new federal security standards will no longer work at airports and other facilities next year. Travelers would have to have a passport or enhanced driver's license. DFL Governor Mark Dayton says the legislature needs to act.
We have to pass a Real ID bill, or Minnesotans are going to be able to get on commercial airplanes starting in January. I mean, it's just no other option. It's not about satisfying ourselves. It's first and foremost about satisfying the federal government.
But the immigration issue has gummed up the works. Unauthorized immigrants are currently prohibited by administrative rules from obtaining Minnesota driver's licenses. The House passed a Real ID bill that would make that prohibition a law rather than a rule. DFL legislators who hope that unauthorized immigrants can one day get licenses object to the provision. In the Senate, they combined with Republicans who oppose Real ID on data privacy grounds to defeat the bill. Senate Republican leaders eventually took out the rulemaking section of the bill to get the DFL votes needed to pass it on their second try. Republican Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka said he's optimistic about finding a compromise.
That's the hard part of what we're trying to do. The House wants to make it crystal clear that they cannot do it. Ours is just not addressing that at all, and that's the part where the rub is right now between the House and Senate. But in the end, I do believe we will get a bill that comes out of conference that people on both sides, House and Senate, sign and the governor signs.
Governor Dayton is among those who support licenses for unauthorized immigrants, but he stressed last week that he has no authority to make such a change without legislative approval. Dayton blamed House Republicans for bringing the immigrant issue into the Real ID debate.
I didn't bring it up. They're the ones who got it started, and then the Senate responded accordingly. So, that's where it stands.
Republican House Speaker Kurt Dowd said he thinks Real ID and unauthorized immigrant licenses are separate issues that should not be tied together. Dowd said it was good to hear Dayton's comments about his limited authority.
Obviously, the governor feels that he can't change that through rulemaking. So we can just take, if he believes they can't, we can certainly change our language to make sure that our bill reflects what he believes to be true, and we can send that to him. And that should wrap this issue completely up. There should be no further disagreement. It doesn't have to be a prohibitive thing, but just say that, that he can't change that through rulemaking. That's fine with us.
The House and Senate bills direct the State Department of Public Safety to begin issuing Real ID compliant licenses and identification cards by October 2018. Minnesotans will also have the option of getting a license or card that does not comply with Real ID. Minnesota will also need to get a federal waiver on enforcement to allow enough time to put all the changes in place. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Congress is also taking a break, and a few in Minnesota's delegation have planned to hold town hall meetings. Back when Republicans had a plan in the U.S. House to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, some of those meetings turned into intense sign-waving scenes. Even as Obamacare continues, some remain frustrated and fearful of what's to come. Dan Gunderson went to a town hall held by Congressman Colin Peterson in Moorhead and filed this report.
Congressman Peterson spoke to about 120 people from around northwest Minnesota gathered in a Moorhead Middle School auditorium.
I'm here to see if anybody has got the magic solution. If you do, I would love to hear it.
Peterson says he doesn't have that magic solution, but he's convinced successful healthcare legislation will require bipartisan support. Peterson, a Democrat, opposed many provisions of Obamacare and voted against it years ago, but he says the current law can be improved, and the Republican plan, pulled before it could receive a full House vote, wouldn't have fixed problems like rising costs of health care and health insurance. The congressman whose district went for Donald Trump in November says he's hearing from farmers in his heavily agricultural district who can no longer afford health insurance.
Ordinary people make $50,000 a year, cannot be paying $1,500 a month. That's just out of, you know, before they were paying $500 maybe. That was still tough. It wasn't easy, but they could do it. But $1,500 and $15,000 deductible? I mean, that's not having insurance.
Leanne Wolf told Peterson he could be talking about her. Wolf and her husband both own small businesses nearby in the small town of Glendon. Wolf says she's decided if she gets cancer, she simply won't get treatment because the cost would bankrupt her family. Wolf says she made that decision after a friend's wife was recently diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
And that's really where the conversation came. And I said, if I were the one were diagnosed, I would not go for treatment. I would not do that to him. I would make a different choice. So all we can do is pray that nothing bad happens to both of us until it's fixed for everyone.
One of the groups that asked for the town hall was Indivisible FM. Organizer Nicole Mattson says the group is connected with about 3,000 people in Fargo-Moorhead. Mattson was concerned about where Congressman Peterson stood on health care.
But I feel a lot better now, having heard him talk about it, to feel like he is going to work really hard to protect our health care in District 7.
Mattson would have liked a larger crowd, but she was pleased with the discussion.
This is what I expected from a Minnesota town hall, was people politely filing up to the microphone and asking their questions and getting a respectful answer. And I think this is what democracy should be like.
Peterson says he's open to having more meetings about an issue that's resonating across his western Minnesota district. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
New numbers out this week paint a grim picture of opiate-related deaths in the Twin Cities. In Hennepin County alone, 153 people died of overdoses last year. That's a 58% increase from the year before. Ramsey County also saw a sharp increase. Matt Sepik has the story.
Those who died range in age from a stillborn infant to a 66-year-old. Twin Cities addiction researcher Carol Falkowski analyzed the autopsy data, something she's been doing for decades. Falkowski says the 153 Hennepin County opiate-related deaths and the 62 in Ramsey County represent an unprecedented increase.
Having written these reports almost twice a year for over 30 years, it's rare to see such a significant increase in any drug, looking at the deaths from one year to the next.
Even during the worst years of the 1980s crack epidemic, Falkowski says the year-over-year increase in fatalities was more gradual. Today, she says fentanyl is largely to blame. The powerful synthetic painkiller was a factor in 56 opiate-related deaths in both counties last year, a nearly five-fold increase. Falkowski says users often mix multiple drugs, but with fentanyl, they could be doing that inadvertently. The painkiller has been turning up as an added ingredient in heroin, cocaine, and other street drugs, and buyers may not know they're ingesting it.
It's not uncommon to see overdose deaths because fentanyl is so strong that just a little bit of it can result in sudden death.
Falkowski notes in her report that counterfeit pills that included fentanyl were implicated in the death of pop superstar Prince nearly a year ago. Now law enforcement agencies have spotted an even more disturbing trend, drugs laced with carfentanil, an animal tranquilizer that's 100 times more potent than fentanyl. Last month, the Hennepin County Medical Examiner confirmed its role in five deaths earlier this year, believed to be the first carfentanil fatalities in Minnesota. The drug can kill in such minute quantities that it took a special lab to detect it. Authorities suspect carfentanil was a factor in as many as five other deaths, though chemical tests are still pending. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.